Grab your bat microphone, it's time to start the show. Like a court of owls, the mystery is starting to grow. Let there be no debate, it's about to begin. Keen like Bruce Wayne, quick like Tim Drake, fierce like Damien. Grab your headphones, listen up, you know you love it. Drop the facade. Like the Dark Knight Detective, they've got some perspective. They're a pure crime-fighting collective. It's the Bat Pod.
Welcome to the Bat Pod, Episode 4. My name is Bill Beer, and joining me as always, Joey Galvez.
Hey, how's it going tonight, Bill?
It's going pretty good, pretty good. But I have a question for you. I know kind of a popular guy right now. You're on all these, you're guest hosting on these podcasts. But you know, I got some tire tracks on my backside. I can't get off.
Uh-oh.
It seems like every time you're on these shows, I get thrown under the bus for not liking something.
Yeah. I'm sorry about that, buddy. I was on Martin's show about a week or two ago, and then I was on Paul and Michael's Occasionally Save the World recently as well. And yeah, you know, I'm sorry if I dragged you under the bus there a little bit. The topic was Titans, and you've said to me before that it may not be your favoriteest thing, but the other day you did tell me that it's your favorite DC TV show. So
that's currently on.
That's currently on. So that's I'm sorry. Let's redeem yourself a little bit here.
We're not here to talk about the Titans. We're here to talk about some Batman comics, and tonight we have some good stuff for you. We have Batman number 57, Nightwing number 51, Detective Comics number 990, and let's get to the book.
We are a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network.
The Batpod is a spoiler podcast. Please read the comics we're reviewing so you can enjoy the show.
So our first issue tonight is Batman number 57. Your writer, Tom King. Your artist, Tony S. Daniel. Your folktale artist is Mark Buckingham and Andrew Pepoy. Colors, Tamu More. Letters, Clayton Cowles. Your variant cover is Francisco Bettina. Associate editor is Brittany Holzner. And your editor is Jamie S. Rich. And in this issue, we have a fight of epic proportions between Batman and the Cagey Beast. And a folktale bedtime story. With an ending that is strangely similar to Ten Nights of the Beast. What an ending.
Yeah. Could that be considered a bedtime story?
Well, I tell you what, when I opened up this book, I was like, is this an advertisement? Is this an ad? Because the art was so different. I thought it wasn't the beginning of the book.
Yeah, it did look very off just for a second there. And then when you read the creators there, you're like, oh, okay, I kind of get it. That's kind of cool.
But right off the bat, I have to say this artwork fantastic in this book. Yeah. I just, there are so many pages that just was so awesome in this book.
Yeah, I love that split page there where you see the Beast and Batman kind of, it's really cool. They got a close up of each one of them. It's pretty awesome.
And there's that scene as Batman goes to the door and KG Beast, it just litters the door with bullets.
Oh, yeah.
And you see the bullets coming through the door and, you know, the blurred path of where the bullet was.
And you see one of the bullets hits Batman a little bit there. The one gets him right in the shoulder.
Yep. And then we have this folk tale that, you know, we have a little story. I didn't really know where they were going with this. Did you have any idea what this was?
No, not at all. And I didn't have time to kind of look it up myself and see if this was actually a real folk tale.
It is.
But man, it is. Is it?
Yes. It's a real folk tale. It's a Russian folk tale from 1916. And I'm not even going to give you who the writer is because I can't pronounce it.
Man, this is a crazy, crazy folktale. I mean, you're telling kids this story, and it's pretty sadistic, man. It's pretty wild.
And, you know, it's the KG Beast that's at the beginning here that's getting this folktale read to him, and you're like, ah, this makes sense why he's so messed up. You know, a father who's a drunk father reads this bedtime story to him that's all, you know, the animals in the pit.
And they eat each other.
And they eat each other. Yeah, eat each other. And then at the end there, the fox talks the pig into basically eating himself.
It was so crazy. I was like, where are they going with this? But man, there was not a lot of dialogue in this one, except for the folktale there, but you didn't need it. It was so awesome.
No, and there was no fighting in between the panels. You saw the whole fight.
Yeah.
And it was, awesome. It was pretty awesome. There's that scene that, you know, he throws the batarang in through the window and the KGB catches it on his fake arm.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
That was awesome. Yeah. The Batman comes flying right through the window and man, they go at it, man. They exchange some blows and it was pretty cool. This was definitely, like you said, a fight of epic proportions.
Now, there's a couple things we need to talk about.
All right.
Because there's an uproar about this book.
Uh-oh.
And we get to the end and, you know, Batman gets out his grappling gun, shoots it at KG Beast, hits him like in the throat area. And the KG yeah. Beast is laying there and says, my back is broken. And Batman decides to tell him, tough. And not so many words.
Right.
Because the
right.
KG Beast wants him to save him. If you save me, I'll tell you who set this whole thing up, who hired me.
Right, right.
And he's like, I'm the world's greatest detective. I don't need help.
What a line.
And he leaves him there. Leaves him for dead. How yeah. did you feel about this?
When I saw that, oh man, I don't know if I was upset or I think I even messaged you and I said, dude, did I just see what happened? Is this actually happening right here? We had that conversation. Should Batman kill? We bring it up a whole lot, right? I think that's one of those biggest questions that we all have. Should Batman kill? And, you know, he's done this how many times, countless times to KG Beast now throughout Batman history. Batman has, you know, beat him to a bloody pulp and left him for dead, but he keeps coming back. So is this going to be one of those moments or is he really going to die?
In 10 Nights of the Beast, and I reread that just to refresh my memory.
Uh-huh.
And those of you who haven't read it recently, you know, Batman and KG Beast are fighting like in the sewers and they go into this room and Batman just locks the door and leaves. Like he's leaving him down there to die. Now this, there's some questions that I have with this. And number one, and you know, some of these questions are a little flimsy because, okay, is the KG Beast's back really broken? Do you think his back is really broken or he was trying to, you know, he was injured, but he was trying to trick him to help him out?
Yeah.
Or do you think, yes, his back was broken. There's no way he'll be able to get out of there and he's going to die.
Well, if that's the case, if he is going to die, you know, it's snowing pretty hard out there. He's going to get filled. He's going to get covered there with snow very quickly and he's going to die of hypothermia, if not, you know, from internal bleeding. But
well, here's the thing. Here's where the twist comes in. There's another twist in this book and the twist is this folktale because it starts out with a KG Beast. As a kid, he's being read this bedtime story. And then it's Bruce Wayne is being read this bedtime story by his father. And it's Bruce's favorite story. So this story is ingrained in his brain. You know, you never know what happens to the fox.
Right, right. And the fox, yeah, the fox is left there in the pit.
Fox is basically left for dead. And not really left for dead like the KG Beast is. There's no way to get out of this hole. Don't know if he's still there. Don't know if he's alive or dead.
Right.
But do you think that has something to do with Batman leaving him there?
For me, I think that when I read that last page there and I saw this, the first thing that I thought was they're the same. They're exactly the same. And, you know, Batman may have that one rule, but, you know, is he stepping over that rule this time? And that's all it takes for Batman, just to step over that rule very quickly. Batman may say that he's doing this in the name of everybody innocent. He and KG Beast are the same.
I can't say I agree with that, but if you were in his shoes and he attempted to murder Nightwing, you don't shoot somebody the head and like, oh, I'm just going to injure him. He intended to murder him. Would you do the same thing? Would you leave him there? To die. I mean, we don't know at some point that it might get written in. Yeah, he called in the Justice League or whatnot, whoever, to come and rescue him or whatever. Or if he let him to die. And I know that's the big uproar that Batman doesn't kill and he broke his one rule. And it's a little cloudy Let's put it that way. It's a little cloudy because it's not like he put a gun to his head.
The thing that I was thinking about when I was reading this, how can Batman do something like this? If somebody did this to my children or to my son, I'd probably do exactly the same thing that Batman did. And that's what I was thinking. That's how he can do this. That's how he can leave him there laying in the snow. He said, I don't have to kill you, but I don't have to help you either. And
yes, just like from the, you know, Batman Begins.
Yeah.
You know, that line that everybody hated.
It's a big one, man. I want to see what's going to happen next.
I think it's just going to be vague until another writer comes along and, you know, said, oh, he's in Arkham, you know.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
I mean, and nobody is dead in comics for long.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But here's the last question that I have. Is Batman falling further into darkness? We have the wedding breakup. We have, you know, the Mr. Freeze case where he wrongly accused Mr. Freeze. He was very brutal with Mr. Freeze when whatever these murders were, it wasn't Mr. Freeze that did it. And when he took a step back, he figured that out. But that and Nightwing getting shot in the head.
And then now this.
And then this. It's taking him in a dark direction. I mean, Bane's behind this, obviously, but I wonder how much further things are going to go.
This is exactly what Bane wants. He wants him to go down this deep, dark path that he can't get back out of. He wants him to step over that line. He wants him to go and break his one rule. He wants him to be broken. He wants to break him all over again. He broke him physically. Now he's trying to break him mentally. And I think that's exactly what he's doing. He is going down a deep, dark path and getting even darker. I believe so.
Yeah, this was a very interesting issue, I do have to say. So the other thing that we did this week, we took to Twitter to ask if anybody else had any input about this, because it was a big thing that happened. If anybody wanted to, you know, leave us a voicemail, send us an audio clip, or an email. And we did get one audio clip from Bob Rowland, Gal Walks Into a Comic Shop podcast. And we'll go ahead and listen to that now.
Hey, everybody. This is Bob from the Gal Walks Into a Comic Shop podcast and contributor to the Batpod webpage. Wanted to share my thoughts about the recent issue of Batman. It's a good issue. Strong protagonist, strong antagonist. It's a great fight scene. The art is spectacular. And if it wasn't a Batman comic, I would say that's a pretty decent magazine, and I wouldn't think too much about it. Except it is Batman, and except for that ending. Batman kills a man. Now, should Batman kill or not is a topic that has been discussed before, and some have argued from a logical perspective, of course he should. He's being ethically negligent when he allows his enemies to kill again. Some have argued that it would make sense for him to kill, given his nature and makeup of his psychology. He's seen the worst of humanity in Gotham and its enemies, and how would you not kill under those circumstances? But Batman should not kill. I know for the first year and a half, he killed more than a few people. He carried a gun. He also had suction cup gloves and smoked a pipe. They were still working on the character, right? For decades and decades afterwards, there was one line that Batman would never cross. It's what made him a hero. And that's something that's lost when Batman left KG Beast to die. I'm not going to argue about the ethics of killing. I'm a comic book podcaster. I'm sure nobody cares how I feel about the morality of capital punishment. I'm not even going to argue the ethics and philosophy of if a superhero should ever be allowed to kill. There are many heroes who have killed in the past and remained heroic characters. Captain America comes to mind. Wonder Woman. Heroes who, when faced under extraordinary circumstances and to save the lives of others, have crossed that line. But what I'm going to argue is that the killing of KG Beast is not something the character of Batman would or should do, and that Batman's ethics of not killing criminals has to remain in place for the character to still work for future generations. Look, first, leaving the Beast with a broken neck lying in the snow to slowly die of exposure is not an action Batman would condone from others. Now, I understand there's a precedent here. In 1986, Batman was faced with a KG Beast, a foe he couldn't defeat, and with the safety of the United States on the line. In that case, Batman was outclassed by the Beast. He locked the beast in a sewer, presumably to die. Later, and only a few episodes later, it'd be revealed he told the police where to find him after a couple of days. In this case, the most recent issue, though, the beast had already been defeated. I mean, it's comics. I mean, Cagey Beast would eventually have turned up with a cyborg spine or something, but we need to accept the fiction that is presented to us. There were no lives on the line. This was Batman hunting down a man for vengeance and killing him. He didn't do it to save the world. He didn't do it for the greater good. He did it because he was angry, and that's not the Batman we know. We can't even excuse it because he's upset about losing his girlfriend. I've been dumped in my past. It wouldn't have excused me from killing somebody in cold blood. The argument that it wasn't murder is also flawed. If Batman had brought him back to the cabin, a broken man, and eventually gotten help for him when he got back to the Batplane, it wouldn't have been murder. But this was murder, plain and simple. You go to a man's house, you beat him up, you paralyze him, and you leave him in the snow to die of exposure. You are a murderer. And what does that mean for Batman? It means that we have to look at the other issue, how this ruins Batman as a character. Look, nature of comic book writing is that you're playing with someone else's toys, right? It's understood that when writers take the toy out of a toy box and try and put it back for the next writer when they're done, you could repair some broken bits of that toy or even give the toy a new paint job when it's done. You still put the toy back. Tom King has now left the toy in worse shape for the next writer. Let me explain. Think about the common Batman trope, a situation where he's facing the Joker. Joker always argues that, he wins no matter what. You know, if he kills Batman, then he wins. But if Batman kills him, then Batman becomes a bad guy. We've seen it play out before, right? Now that Batman has crossed the line, what's the logical reason to stop him from killing the Joker? He's already crossed that line. He is already willing to kill a person. Why not kill the Joker? And if he kills the Joker, then why not the Penguin? The Penguin has killed other people. He'll be responsible for other people's death in the future. Why not kill him? Well, how about the Riddler? Ra's al Ghul? Man-Bat? There's no walking back from the moment Batman kills one of his enemies. There's no logical excuse for him not to kill every villain he faces. Maybe we should put a skull in his chest instead of a bat. And you know what's going to happen. Cagey Beast is revealed to have been saved in some comic book-related fashion. It doesn't fix the problem. You've removed any logical reason for him not to kill other people and on a regular basis. The nature of the medium says every month Batman will face somebody terrible or be placed in a dire situation. You're never going to remove the stain of the reader thinking now, well, why wouldn't Batman just kill this guy just like he killed Cagey Beast? It isn't the fault of Tom King. Tom King is a great writer. It's the fault of an editorial staff that wasn't watching over him close enough when he started treating the toy rough. That toy is going to be difficult to repair when it goes back into the box. Thankfully, it's comics. Someday there's going to be someone to figure out how to repair this now damaged character, and I just hope it's sooner rather than later. I was very disappointed with the ending of this comic book. Anyways, Bill, Joey, thank you very much for having me on. And you can catch me writing for the Batpod webpage and, of course, my podcast, Gal Walks in a Comic Shop. Goodbye, everybody.
Thank you very much for that, Bob. We really appreciate it. Now, that's a strong opinion that he has there.
Yeah, he had some really great things that he brought up. You know, he brought up a handful of comic characters who actually do cross that line, and he made some great points. Should we just put a skull on Batman's chest rather than the bat, And I think that was a really great opinion. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and there was not much there that you could argue, really.
Right, right. This whole him searching out Cagey Beast is out of character for him, and I think you were kind of touching on that a little bit as well, He's doing this out of anger because he is going down that deep, dark path. He lost his significant other, and then he beat Mr. Freeze to a bloody pulp. And then this happened. It's just a deep, dark path that we've seen Batman going down for quite some time. And is this really the Batman that we know?
That's interesting. It's interesting. I mean, in reality, even if he wanted to save him, he would have a rough time doing it. How is he going to get him out of there? He lost bat planes going down just to get there. Now, yeah, I'm defending him a little. I don't think it's as clear cut as he left him to die. I think there's a lot of questions in this one.
Yeah.
But Bob, thank you for your opinion. We really appreciate it. If anybody else out there has any opinions about this, we'd love to hear it. Send us an email, you know, send us a voicemail or audio clip. We'd love to hear your opinions on this book. Do you have anything else to add?
No, I think we said it all. That was a pretty good issue.
You trying to get under my cape, Doctor?
A girl can't live by psychoses alone.
It's the car, right? Chicks love the car.
I want a car. Chicks dig the car.
Don't adjust your sets. Welcome to the Oswald Cobblepot School of Driving. Gentlemen, start your screaming. It's a bad time to mention this, but my license is expired.
So what do you think? Does it come in black?
Welcome to Topic of the Week, and the topic this week is your favorite Batmobile top three. This was something we put on Twitter, and it came in second place. I wasn't overly excited about this at first. I have no idea what my favorite Batmobile is. And to come up with a top three, I really had to go and do some research. But after a while, it came to me pretty quick. Okay. It really did. So we're going to do top three, start with three and go to one. And tonight it's just Joey with us. Nate Campbell couldn't make it, so it's just two of us. And go ahead with your number three.
All right. So my number three is actually probably the beefiest of all the three that I picked. And it was probably one that it's a pretty good one. It is the Batmobile from The Dark Knight Returns, the comic book, the movie, whatever. You know how huge that thing is? It almost looks like a tank. And it's just way huge, way crazy looking. That was my top number three.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. They got that idea for the Dark Knight movies.
Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
That one was pretty cool. When I saw that thing in action for the first time in the animated movie, it was so awesome, man. I think I even jumped out of my seat when I seen it for the first time. And the things that thing can do, that thing was awesome. So cool. I want one for myself.
And you know, that's probably the most realistic in the real world. Out of all the Batmobiles. Yeah. I mean, logistically, it's probably the most realistic. That's a cool one. I do like that one. That is not in my top three, but my number three is from Detective Comics 27, the first appearance of Batman.
Okay.
It is the first Batmobile. How can the first Batmobile not be in your top three? It's the Batmobile. Now, it was red and it looked like some kind of luxurious sedan of some sort by a rich billionaire. It's like he used his car that he usually drives around with as the Batmobile also.
Yep, it's just a little simple red convertible.
Yeah.
Like an old school one. That one's really cool. I like it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's the first one, so that's why I put it in there.
1930s, 40s style.
I know they changed it up before too long, but that's cool. That's cool. I like some of the old style, you know, in the way back when the original issues, they had some very interesting style. And I bet you if you counted how many times they changed styles of the Batmobile, it would be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds because every artist had a different interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for those first handful of years, the first four Batmobiles, the first two actually kind of looked very similar, but the only difference was they put some wings on the back there, and it looks like they did that quite a few times, right? That's one of those things that they do a lot with these Batmobiles.
Yeah, that's you put some wings on it or fins or something like that.
So my number two is going to be Batman 89, the movie, the Tim Burton movie Batmobile. That was my number two. That one was awesome. When I first seen that one with the fire coming out of the jets in the back and Batman, you know, gets in it for the first time. And
yeah, it was awesome in the movie. It was awesome to see it for the first time. But realistically, that thing is like made of like plastic from the look of it. And as they went on, you know, Batman Forever and Batman and Robin, it looked flimsier and flimsier. It glowed and different things. But yeah,
so,
I agree with
you. So what you're telling me is Batman Forever is going to be your number one, right?
No. No. I thought it was cool seeing it for the first time. Again, mm-hmm. that wasn't in my top three, but my number two is going to be the Batmobile from Batman 66.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
You're ready to move off.
Now, but the reason I like it is maybe not necessarily because it was in the series. Yeah, it's cool and all, but I like mm-hmm. the interpretations that they took into the comics of that.
Uh-huh.
And there were a lot of different interpretations of that. I mean, you still see versions of today, yeah. but I do like how that Batmobile was set up. You know, it had the windshield that was like cupped for Batman and then Robin. It was very cool. It was very cool. And hey, how can you not love that Batmobile?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was, I have to say that I liked it because it became another character on that show. You know, they used it and they got into it almost every episode, and it was pretty cool. I liked it. I still like seeing it. Yeah. You know, you always have people coming out with those replicas, and that's one of those ones that a lot of people have a replica of.
Yes. Yes. Always. Yeah.
And I got to tell you, man, 60s, 65, 66, that was the year cars were awesome out. I just got to tell you, those were some pretty tough looking cars out that those years right there.
Yeah. They were cool. I like the style, yeah.
So my number one, you're probably going to know exactly which one this is, right? Batman the Animated Series. Come on.
Yeah, no big surprise there.
That one's just nostalgia for me. You know, I mean, that one and the Batman 89, those two have to be right up there because that's what I grew up with for the first time. I saw Tim Burton's Batman and then the Batman Animated Series. That was mine. That's what I grew up on. I wasn't old enough to see, you know, Super Friends for the first time or anything like that. Or I wasn't old enough to see, you know, Batman 66 come out. Unless it was on reruns. So that's not really nostalgic for me. So right. These 90s ones, that's where it's at for me. And that's the reason why I like those a whole lot. You know, I could argue that I like the Batman Begins ones and that trilogy. Those ones really, really cool too. I liked how that one can actually, you know, transform into the Batpod, the motorcycle.
Oh, which yeah. is
pretty cool. But, you know, I have to stick with the animated series Batmobile.
Very cool. And my number one, this should be a surprise to nobody that's listened to this show in the last week or two, but mine is not one distinct style of Batmobile, but it was a version by a particular artist. And that artist is Norm Breyfogle. And the way he drew the Batmobile, you know, it was like some slick Lamborghini, and sometimes it had different fins and wings on it. But the way it moved up and down the road was just awesome. The way it looked in action, that is definitely my favorite version of the Batmobile. Which, you got to read some of the stuff, man.
I'm reading them, man. I'm reading
really?
Them.
Okay.
I'm reading them now. There's so many of these Batmobiles, man. When I started actually looking these things up, I was like, oh, I'm only going to find five or six, maybe. I found almost 30 of them. And I think that's how many different Batmobiles there are. I mean, if you're just counting the year and the make and the model and type of thing like that. Now, you know, you have all different artists drawing the same kind of Batmobile, and they all kind of differ a little bit. But if you're going to actually look at them from the year, there's almost 30 Batmobiles. That's quite a bit.
I'm sure there's more than that, isn't there?
Oh, well, I'm sure if we can actually do a whole lot of homework and find a handful more.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure. As I said, every artist's interpretation of it probably changed. And the one Batmobile I want to mention, do you remember the series, the Batman and Robin series from Grant Morrison? Batman was dead and Dick Grayson took over as Batman. The Batmobile in there had a lot of red in it and it could actually fly.
Yeah. I'm looking at that one right now.
Yeah, that was a cool one. That was also a cool one.
That was around, what is that, 2009-ish?
Yeah, somewhere around in there. I'm not good with pulling, you know, off the top of my head, you know, years, but yeah, somewhere in the 2000s, mid to late 2000s, so.
Cool. That's
awesome. So yeah, that was a pretty good topic, even though I thought, oh, I don't know about this one, but yeah, Pretty good topic. If anybody out there has any thoughts about what your favorite Batmobile or interpretation that we didn't cover, let us know. We'd love to hear it.
If you want more of the Batpod, head on over to thebatpod.com.
What a beautiful summer day. Bob, it's Wednesday, hump day. There's so much to do. A new exhibit at the gallery. Let's go to the park and have a picnic. I got a better idea. Let's head over to the bar and catch a show and stir up some trouble.
Now, Barbara, we can't do that. It's Wednesday.
Wednesday. Oh, no. That means...
New comic book day. It's time for the gal to walk into a comic shop.
My Wednesdays might be shot, but that just means that come Tuesday, you guys get to listen to a new episode of A Gal Walks Into a Comic Shop, a comic book podcast where each week I do something I never thought I'd do, read comic books.
It's about sharing passion.
Introducing new readers to the world of comics.
Playing crazy quizzes.
Singing songs.
And giving reviews and commentary on the latest releases.
Join us every Tuesday on A Gal Walks Into a Comic Shop. Search for us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you get your pods. You know you want to.
How can they resist?
I wish I could have.
Hey, I'm Jen.
And I'm Sean. We're here to tell you about our podcast, Worst Collection Ever.
And this is the show where we tell you about the worst comic book collection in existence, and it just happens to belong to us.
We have some of the worst comics from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. They're bad. They're not worth anything.
No good.
Why do we own them? I own number of issues of Terror Inc. and Guy Gardner.
Basically, we go around to local comic book stores and we buy everything we can out of dollar boxes.
We tell you about the weird stuff in them. We tell you about stuff that's related to them. We go into tangents and we're very uninformed. So,
oh my God, totally. But totally check out our podcast because you'll hear us just talk and joke about Marvel books and DC books from God only knows when.
That's right. It's our show, Worst Collection Ever, every Tuesday on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcasts. Download, rate, subscribe, tell a friend.
It'll be good and terrible, but good.
All right, Nightwing number 51. We've got Scott Lobdell in the plot, Fabian Nicieza, additional script, Travis Moore and Gary Brown as the artist, Hi-Fi, Nick Filardi as the colorist, D'Ron Bennett as the letterer, Dave Wagles, assistant editor, Katie Kubert, editor, Jamie S. Rich, group editor, and Nightwing was created by Marv Wolfman and George Perez. So in this issue, we open up the book with a torched lair, and we get a handful of police officers searching and combing the area. We see some really cool flashbacks as Rick Grayson wakes up from a nightmare in a bar. He is very arrogant and takes a stroll with Alfred Pennyworth. Some of his memory comes back, but still, he does not want to be Nightwing. What did you think about this book? I talked to you a little bit about the ending. We won't get there yet, but whoa.
Well, this is another book that has a very strong opinion out there. I think it's overwhelmingly hated. I could be wrong, but yeah. The direction of this book, people are mad about it. But here's the thing. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a really good one.
This is the first time in recent memory where I wanted to read this as soon as I could. You know what I'm saying? This all makes sense in what happened. You might not like what happened. I'm just trying to enjoy the story.
Yeah, yes. There were some good.
We might have seen something similar and happened to Batman, where Batman, you know, didn't remember who he was in New 52, but this is sort of different, you know?
It was pretty good, man. We get some really great artwork in this issue, too. There was one area where I was so impressed, where you see he's kind of having this dream here. He's remembering a little bit about Nightwing and Batgirl and Robin there. They're all fighting Two-Face and his goons. And there's one moment where their faces are gone. Robin and Batgirl's faces are gone. You can't really see who they are. They almost look like fingerprints. And then one moment, you know, their heads kind of look like they get blown apart. And he wakes up. That's when he screams and he wakes up inside that bar. But man, this was pretty awesome. You see that quite a bit in this issue. He's kind of remembering some things. He's got great memory about cars and...
Well, he remembers what happened to him and his parents. He remembers that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But But pretty much after that, he doesn't remember anything.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to be reminded of who he was. And, you know, that's why he torched the place. But he didn't do such a good job of torching the place. Because all his costumes survived.
Right. Everything survived. You got police officers and fire department combing the area. And but the thing is, with this one, I love the progression here. You see in that bar when he wakes up, you see Alfred Pennyworth. He's there and kind of looking out for him. And he remembers, he's like, oh, Mr. Pennyworth, how's it going? And they kind of have a conversation. Alfred pays his tab. Cause, you know, he doesn't have any money and he's racking up a huge tab there. It's just complete debauchery coming out of this guy, right?
Yeah. This was one of my favorite scenes where Alfred was there and you knew it was Alfred before he even said who he was,
mm-hmm.
just from the artwork.
Yeah. It was pretty good.
And it gave you this warm feeling, you know, Alfred is worried. Bruce is worried, but Bruce wouldn't show up. Bruce wouldn't show his face there. He might show up in disguise. But yeah, that was like a touching scene that Alfred was like the grandfather, you know,
mm-hmm.
checking up on his grandson.
Yeah. And I don't know if I told you that there was a couple of places in, I think even in this issue and even in the last issue, there was a couple of guys that were sitting around that made me think, you know, is that Bruce?
I know you said something about a homeless person or something that was in one scene.
Yeah, there was a homeless guy sitting there. His head was down. He was the same kind of build that Bruce Wayne was. And it made me wonder, is that Bruce? And he wouldn't check up on Rick, you know, directly, but he would definitely do it indirectly and he would put a disguise on and kind of walk around and kind of watch him in that manner.
We have to talk about this one scene that, you know, Rick gets held up by a guy with a gun.
Yeah. In the last issue there where we were talking about how he's got this muscle memory, you know, he finally figures that out here as, you know, this guy's got his gun to the back of his head and he gets distracted by something or somebody back there. And Rick here, he kind of goes at it and you see him just punching this guy out and taking it out. And he doesn't even know, well, what did I do? And this guy's laid out on the floor and he's like, I don't know what the heck. My muscles moved independently. This is crazy. It was just all instinct. And you see that he took the gun apart and everything. And it was just complete instinct.
Yeah. And doesn't realize how he did any of that. And you see, you know, you see in the background, Nightwing taking the guy out.
But another big one here was this last page here. You see somebody there looking at the glass cases. And you see in the next few panels, this guy is putting on the Nightwing costume there. But the one thing that you see him do is put on some guns on his hip. First, when I was looking through this,
well, you know who it is.
Yeah, it's the police officer who was combing through the area. When I first looked at this, I was kind of taking a little sneak peek at this, you know, cause we've been getting some doozies in the last few issues. So I kind of took a sneak peek and I said, whoa, 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 this guy's got the Nightwing costume on and some guns. I need to read this. And I read it almost immediately, but we've kind of seen this before, haven't we? We've seen Batman.
Wait a second. You're telling me that you opened this up and went to the last page first?
Yeah. This is the only time that I've done it. And I always tell you that that's the big thing I never do, right? And I did it.
Yeah, that was cool. He is in a Nightwing costume and he's holding this gun and he's in the reflection of the tube that the costume was in. Very interested to see where this goes.
But we kind of seen this before, right? We seen, you know, where Gordon took over the Batman mantle in the DCU.
It's a little different. It was like a Robo-Bat kind of thing. But this is actually going to be, this is a newer take. I mean, anybody out there might say, oh, you don't know what he's talking about or whatever. But yeah, Nightwing with a gun. Can you remember when Nightwing had a gun? If you can, please let us know, because I don't know of a time.
Yeah, I don't think I kind of looked it up. I don't think I've seen anything out there with Nightwing with guns. If there is, yeah, please let us know.
Interesting. I'm very interested. Scott Lobdell, you know, he's been knocking it out of the park with his Red Hood. And at least this first issue of Nightwing, it's got me, you know, I can't wait for next issue.
Yeah, this one was really good. I liked it a whole lot. All right. I think we can wrap it up here.
welcome to the Bat Pod Stump Your Co-Host segment. Listen while Bill tries to stump his co-host. Can he do it? Let's wait and find out.
Welcome to Stump the Co-Host. And this week we have a good one for you. Joey is trying to maintain his Batman card. I don't think it'll be too easy this week. So are you ready?
Oh, I'm ready. Bring it on.
Okay. Our first question is, what is the first appearance of Ra's al Ghul?
Ooh. All right.
Is it A, Detective Comics 571, B, Batman number 232, or C, Batman number 55?
Ooh, I almost want to say Detective. I don't know if it was Batman. I'm going to say Detective.
Detective 571?
Yes, I'm going with Detective 571.
Well, if you would have picked Batman number 55, you would have been incorrect. That actually is the case of the 48 Jokers. The correct answer would have been Batman number 232 from June 1972. First appearance of Ra's al Ghul. Detective Comics 571 was in, off the top of my head, late 80s, early 90s. So yeah, you got that one wrong. So next up is sort of related to that. Have you brushed up on your Ra's al Ghul?
No.
Okay. The next question is, in what issue, in what issue was Damian Wayne conceived? You know, Batman and Talia hooked up. In what issue was he conceived? A, Batman Son of the Demon. B, Batman number 655. Or C, Batman Birth of a Robin.
Wow. You know what? I'm going to guess on this one because that's funny. I'm going to go with B.
Batman number 655. You're wrong again.
Oh.
It is Batman Son of the Demon, its original graphic novel from 1987 that wasn't in continuity until Grant Morrison brought it into continuity and created Damian Wayne. So,
cool.
Here's your next question.
All right.
We're talking about Ra's al Ghul. What is the first appearance of the League of Assassins? First appearance. Was it Batman 164, Detective Comics 405, or Strange Adventures 215?
Oh, all right. You know what? This one sounds really obscure, though.
Yeah, I think you're going to get this one.
Because that last one is just out of the park, dude. It's like, it's not a... I think I want to go with the last one just because it's not a Batman title. I'm going to go with that one.
Strange Adventures 215, you're correct.
Yeah, I got one.
He was created by Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams. So, awesome. I got a bonus question for you. If you get the bonus question, you will get the cash and prizes.
All right.
What was the name of the League of Assassins and Batman the Animated Series? You're a Batman Animated Series guy, so you should know this one. What is the name of the League of Assassins that they used in Batman the Animated Series?
So there's no multiple choice here on this one?
No, you should know this one.
Okay. You know what? The only other name that I heard was League of Shadows. I can't recall if I've heard anything else.
League of Shadows. Is that what you want to go with?
I think so, because I can't really recall if I heard anything else.
Okay. If you said League of Shadows, you are incorrect.
Oh.
It was Society of Shadows in Batman the Animated Series.
See, I knew it had to be Shadows something.
Of course, it was adapted, so... It doesn't look like you won our cash and prizes. Would you like to hear what you would have won?
I do.
Are you kind of a health nut? Do you work out, lift weights?
There is a type of workout, and it's growing my belly.
Okay. Then this prize wouldn't be good for you, because you would have won a free tryout with the League of Assassins. But if you didn't make the cut, that wouldn't have been too good. You would have died a horrible death. So it's good for you. You didn't win that prize.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. So that Batman card, though, I don't know. It's getting closer and closer to the Batman Shredder. It's not looking good.
I did two in a row, man. I got two in a row.
Let's go back. We'll go back and see if you did actually get two in a row. I'm skeptical at this point.
That was a good one, man. That was a good one. I wasn't expecting Ra's al Ghul. That was pretty cool. Are you a guy who says Ra's al Ghul or Ra's al Ghul?
Well, I started saying Ra's al Ghul, but I listened to some kind of podcast, and they always said, didn't they say Ra's on that animated series?
Yeah, they always said Ra's.
Yes. Well, I was listening to some podcast where they had this professor of whatever language that is.
Linguistics or something.
And he said the proper pronunciation of that is Ra's.
Okay. Wow.
But it's confusing because for Batman Begins, they called him Ra's.
Yeah.
So you would think they would stick to the same thing since it's like all DC.
Yeah. Something like that. That's kind of weird, but huh?
Ever since I heard that, I've used Ra's, so...
I sometimes I say Ra's just because, you know, it's what you hear, right? But it's, I've grew up listening to and hearing it as said as Ra's. It's always going to be Ra's al Ghul.
So, yeah. And, of course, you say that I know my trivia. I didn't know any of these. I looked all of them up.
Oh, wow. Cool.
All I do is Google it. And I just come up with a theme. Back to the books.
Yeah, let's go on back to the books.
And our next book is Detective Comics 990. Your writer is James Robinson. Your artist is Steven Segovia. Colors are Ivan Placentia and Alan Pascalacqua. Your letterers are Rob Lay. Your cover by John Paul Leon. Your variant cover, Simone Bianchi. Assistant editor, Dave Wagos. Your editor, Chris Conroy. And your group editor, Jamie S. Rich. And in this issue, we get a little Two-Face, a little Cobra, and more questions, and no gosh darn answers.
I like this issue, man. I mean, I know you said that we don't get any answers and all that stuff, but are we going to see Harvey Dent come out here and help out the GCPD and help out Batman a little bit? So I was excited about that. I do like that aspect of him kind of fighting with himself, going back and forth between good and evil. So I kind of like that idea.
Well, my biggest thing in this issue is, okay, what is Gordon's fault? Remember last issue, it says it's all Gordon's fault. That's not touched on at all.
No, it's not.
What happened with the murder that started this whole thing? And here's my biggest thing, is this particular story arc is a direct effect of this double shipping. James Robinson had to do a fill-in arc to lead into Peter Tomasi's run until Detective 1000. And you know you get these double shippings. I personally believe that this was like a 3 or 4 issue story turned into 6 issues. And because of the double shipping, you have to have an issue like this where not a lot happens. Cobra attacks Gotham City PD.
Yeah.
Why would they do that? Still have no idea. This is issue number 3. We have 2 issues to go. We don't know what's up with Cobra. We don't know what's up with Two-Face. He saves Gordon at one point.
Yeah.
But I believe this is just a filler issue, and it's not James Robinson's fault. It's the double shipping fault. And usually I don't go on rants on the show, but I'm going on a rant because not a lot happened. And you pay $3.99 for these issues.
Yeah.
And to have an issue that, yeah, it was nice seeing Two-Face. Yeah, it was nice seeing Gordon and Bullock or whatever, but nothing added to the story. And at the end, I don't know. It might be a good story when you read them, you know, all six issues together in one sitting. But the way they're giving it to us monthly, I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure about this particular issue.
Yeah, I think I have to agree with that. I mean, I do like aspects of this book because, you know, you see Batman figuring out where Two-Face actually is here in this one. I do like the whole interaction between, you know, Bullock and Gordon, and then the lights go out and, you know, there's somebody there saving him, and it'll look like it was Two-Face there a little bit. So I do like the aspects in this, but I understand where you're coming from, how it can be, you know, an example of maybe one of those, in between issues where it's not really, there's nothing that they're really giving you. They're just giving you just a little bit of tip of the iceberg there, but not enough.
I mean, the story doesn't go forward too much because you still have Cobra. You have no idea what's up with them. You know, that cliffhanger, the first issue where you see the two bodies hanging from the wall. This is the next time we saw Cobra and we get nothing. They just attack the Gotham City PD. Now, is Two-Face behind Cobra for whatever reason? And he had them attack so he can save Jim Gordon? There's something going on with Two-Face and Jim Gordon. I don't know what that is.
That's a good, you know, thought there. You know, did he put them up to this, you know, so that they can think, you know, hey, he's helping us out. This must be Harvey Dent here and not Two-Face. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not particularly sure because in the back of my mind, you know, they have all these twos in there. You had two Fireflies, two Tweedledums, two this, two that. He finds Two-Face's hideout in two halves of a bridge.
Yeah.
And I seem to think all these twos don't add up to anything. It's just it's just done as clues. You know what I'm saying? Two guns.
Yeah, yeah. You know what there on that last page, you see the title that they're giving the next issue, the enemy of my enemy. Are they referring to Cobra being Two-Face's enemy? And, you know, does that mean that they're going to team up in the next issue, you know, against Cobra? Or what's going to happen here? This is one of those things. Like you said, there's not a lot of forward progression. There's not a lot of tidbits in here, but I don't know. I think what we did get, it was actually pretty good. I liked it myself. I do have to agree with you. There's not much in here, but I did like the artwork a whole lot.
I mean, I didn't absolutely hate this, but when we get down to it and I'm trying to come up with questions for the podcast and asking questions, well, we didn't get any answers from the previous episode.
Yeah, true.
The one thing I do say I really liked is when Batman is a Two-Face lair and, you know, they're blowing up the place and he's leaving the building. He looks down and sees Tweedledee and Tweedledum. Uh-huh. And he's like, can't let them die. So he grabs those two guys. And they can't be small men. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I did like that. That was kind of cool. And I do like the interaction when we get interactions between Batman's and some of his villains. That's always interesting to see. And we did get, you know, Gordon, when the lights went out at Gotham City PD, Gordon's first reaction is the power company turned the power off. And they mentioned something, you know, like that in an earlier issue about leaving the bat signal on because the power company is on. They're on them about the power bill or whatever.
Yeah.
So my hope is that we get something next, because there's only two issues left. I think it's three issues. I'm sorry. Uh-huh. Three issues left. So we're at the halfway point. So it just seems to me that, you know, this might be a perfectly good story, but between, hey, we need to stretch this out to six issues. We only got three or four issues worth of material. We got to stretch out some scenes, you know. And, you know, maybe the scenes that got stretched out weren't in the right spots. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I could see
maybe
that.
Maybe it should have been stretched out a little bit in the first issue, a little bit in the next issue, and not maybe a couple issues, not like all filler.
Yeah. I could see that.
You know, that's been my complaint sometimes about double shipping. Don't see it all the time, but here and there, it's like you get an issue and not a lot happens. It almost feels like two issues is one issue. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you get two issues that month, and it feels like a single issue because there's a lot of filler in it.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. Yeah, but man, you got to say this artwork is awesome, though.
Yeah, I did enjoy the artwork. I'm not familiar with the artist.
It was pretty good, though. But yeah, you, like you're saying, you don't get too many answers here. I don't think you get any answers. I always have a problem sometimes when the writers, they kind of stretch out the story, and then like in the middle there, and then you get to like, you have like two or three issues left, and then you have to really rush the story a little bit. I think it kind of gets convoluted a little bit, and you lose a little bit in it when you rush things a little bit. And maybe that's not what the word that I'm looking for. I don't know if you could really tell the ending of a story in three issues.
Well, you could, but it depends how in depth, you know, the rest of the story is. I mean,
yeah, I mean, I
we
guess
have no idea where this is going. I mean, it could definitely end in three issues. It could end in two issues, but there are a lot of answers, you know.
I mean, well, if they give us answers next one, maybe they can do it. But if there's another issue like this,
it seems to me like whatever Cobra's doing, the majority of the stuff that we've gotten so far is Two-Face.
Yeah, right.
Except for the guy that was the assassin's planner who was murdered in the first issue. He might be related to Cobra.
Yeah, we don't even know anything about him.
Well, yeah, we don't really know. So it'd be interesting to see next issue if we get some more of something.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope next issue they start giving us some answers, because, you know, they don't give us any answers and it's another little filler issue. Yeah, they don't have too much time to give us more answers about what's going on here.
Do you have anything else to add about this particular issue?
No, it was a quick issue, quick read. I mean, artwork was awesome. And I keep talking about the artwork, but it was really good. I really like when you see the Batman and Two-Face kind of split there, that page, that was really cool. I looked at that for quite some time.
Yeah, that was a really good awesome page. That was a good page, absolutely. And you know, if the one thing that we can take, because here on the Batpod, we try to take the positives out of the stories that we're doing.
Yeah.
And not necessarily focus on the negatives. But the artwork here is, yeah, pretty good. That panel is probably the best in this book.
Yeah. And you know what? I have to say that even the writing was actually pretty good. I liked it. Yeah, we didn't get any answers. But man, that scene where you're in the GCPD and the lights go out, you see all those criminals there, and even they're scared a little bit, you know, and you see Two-Face coming in and saving Gordon. Man, that was one of my favorite scenes there. It was pretty good. I liked it.
Yeah, that was pretty good. So, okay, we'll move on to our character spotlight.
Spotlight.
So welcome to the character spotlight. Our character is none other than the Black Mask. Familiar with the Black Mask?
I'm not too familiar. I know he showed up in, Under the Red Hood.
Okay, let's jump right in. And his first appearance was Batman 386 from August 1985. He was created by Doug Munch and Tom Mandrake. And his real name is Roman, and I know I'm going to butcher this because I don't know how to pronounce it. Synosis.
Okay.
But I don't think that's the right way to pronounce that. They have the full, you know, original story from birth in those two issues. And you see that Roman was born into wealth, and his parents were very big into high society and what their friends think. So when he was born, Roman was actually dropped on his head.
Oh, really?
But they covered that up because they didn't want friends to know about that. And then as Roman is getting older, they go on this camping trip and he gets bit by a raccoon that has rabies.
Oh,
and they
man.
Tell him, oh, don't tell anybody. We don't want anybody else to know. And they really didn't like their fellow, rich friends, Thomas and Martha Wayne. So they sort of made Roman be friends with Bruce.
That's kind of funny.
And the parents' company was actually Janus Cosmetics.
Okay. Why does that sound familiar?
And after a little while, Roman, you know, he decided to kill his parents.
Wow.
You know how that happens. He was just wanted off his parents, so he burnt the family place down. You know, he took over the company, but then there were some things that were failing. There were some makeup lines that weren't doing what it's supposed to be doing. So Bruce Wayne, head of Wayne Enterprises, bailed out Janus Cosmetics and took control of the company. Oh, and Roman really didn't like that. He didn't really like that his company got taken over. Uh-huh. And he decided to become this villain. You know, he actually carved a mask out of his parents', you know, coffin, ebony coffin. And it was this black mask. And he was doing things and going around with some criminals that he called the False Face Society. And at the end of those first two issues, you know, him and Batman were in a fight and there was a fire and he got knocked down and he went face first into fire. And when they took the mask off, the ebony black mask kind of got embedded into his face. So his face was totally black. It wasn't a mask. And that's how it was originally done, that his mask wouldn't come off. It was just his face. So I really liked how that was. I know they've changed some things in recent, you know, years. So my next experience with the black mask was at Batman 485, 486. That was right before Nightfall. And it's actually reprinted in the prelude to Nightfall. And the black mask, he's seeking revenge on Bruce Wayne and Lucius Fox for what happened when they took over his company. The thing that you see in these particular issues, Batman poses as a new recruit called Skullface, which is kind of funny.
What a name.
So, yeah, the end of that 486, he did able to say Lucius Fox, but Black Mask escapes, and he remains at large through the events of Nightfall. And, you know, the other big storyline was, you know, Catwoman. He tortured Catwoman's friend, Holly.
Okay.
And Catwoman ends up shooting him in the head, murdering him.
Oh, wow.
Which was like a big deal in the Catwoman book. Holly actually gets arrested for his murder because she takes over being Catwoman not too long after that.
Interesting.
And then, you know, they go into this Gotham Underground storyline. And basically that storyline, a lot of it is about all these dozens of would-be crime bosses trying to fill the vacancy by Black Mask death. But Black Mask was another one that in the Blackest Night crossover series, he was resurrected as a Black Lantern, like some other dead villains.
I think
we had one the other week that was resurrected also.
Yeah, I think it was. Wasn't KG Beast?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's very interesting. That's kind of a cool background story.
Yeah. And in this particular story with, you know, Blackest Night, he goes after Catwoman and her sister once more, and he could fly and reorganize structure of buildings. But Poison Ivy managed to stop him by trapping him inside a mutated pitcher plant with its digestive juices dissolving his body as fast as his ring could regenerate it.
Oh, that's... That does not work very well as a visual.
No. We get into the new 52 and DC's continuity is rebooted. Roman is the Black Mask again. His False Face Society is sort of the same. This version of the character sort of has a split personality disorder, which sort of like Two-Face, the mask grants him ability to control the weak-minded. I didn't really like that too much.
Yeah.
In DC Rebirth, Black Mask shows up again, and he's in All-Star Batman, and with him and allied with the Penguin, they actually hire the KG Beast to kill the Batman in those first few issues of that All-Star Batman, and we talked about that a little bit when we were talking about KG Beast.
Yeah, a little bit.
So some other versions of the Black Mask. Jeremiah Arkham was actually the Black Mask briefly.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Huh.
And okay. The Batman Battle for the Cow storyline when Batman was dead.
Uh-huh.
He was revealed to be Jeremiah Arkham, but he had...
That's interesting.
He was suffering a psychotic breakdown from exposure to a variety of mind-altering chemicals from various Batman villains.
Wow.
He was in an Elseworlds storyline called Batman the Crimson Mist.
Huh.
So Black Mask attempts to stave off a rampage by the maddened vampire Batman who later assaults Black Mass Hideout, and butchers his False Face Society, leaving several severed heads outside Blackgate Penitentiary. He appears in Batman Gotham Adventures, which is based on the Batman animated series. He was in Batman Arkham Unhinged and Injustice Gods Among Us, based on video games. He was in the animated series. You don't remember him from the animated series?
Yeah, a couple times I do.
Yeah, he was in quite a few episodes in the animated series. He actually appears in Batman Brave and the Bold. And he was actually in Gotham. And they called him the Mask, which I didn't remember. He was in the first season of that.
Really? I have to rewatch that to remember. That sounds vaguely familiar, though.
He's been in a couple animated movies, The Batman Under the Red Hood. And he was in that graphic novel series with Jason Todd being resurrected in Under the Red Hood. He was also in Batman Bad Blood. So, yeah, he's been a little bit of everywhere. Definitely not an A villain.
Oh, yeah.
I think the place that I remember him to was, the Batman Arkham Asylum games. You had Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, Arkham Origins. Yeah. He was in all those. So, yeah, cool. There's a villain that I enjoy seeing every now and then. I think the biggest reason that I like him is because when I started reading comics, he was in a couple issues. His origin story was in some of the first issues of Batman that I ever picked up. So I started reading him from the ground floor.
That's pretty cool. I always seen him, when they would always kind of portray him as kind of like a goofy character.
Yeah, he always had a group of his gang that always had these different masks. And some of the early issues, he would tell them. He would have a wall full of different masks. And he says, pick your identity. And I think the biggest reason that he took the mask on is because his parents, they covered up so much of stuff they did that when they went out in public, it was their mask. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They didn't act like who they really were. So I think that was the whole reason that he took up the mask. But I do like him falling in the fire, and the mask kind of sticking to his face. The mask comes off, but it kind of gets imprinted on his face. In some versions of the artwork, though, his face is like a skull.
Yeah.
Which is different from how it was originally intended. I don't know how they got to the point where it looked like a skull, if they did something to his face, to make it disintegrate or something like that. It's a cool look, and you definitely know that's in Black Mask, but in the original issues, he did have a mask, so.
Yeah, I always made that joke, when he shows up in Under the Red Hood, he always reminded me of Jim Carrey's The Mask. That's kind of the way he kind of looked to me, and I always thought it was kind of funny.
Yeah, very cool. So that was our character spotlight.
Yeah, it was a pretty good one. That was pretty cool. Interesting. I didn't really know too much of his origin story, so that was kind of a cool one.
Let's go ahead and end it here, and I actually want to end it a little bit differently this time.
Okay.
Because we had some big issues in this particular episode, one being the Batman issue and the Nightwing issue, and I just want to, it's been a couple days since we recorded that the first part of the episode, and I wanted to see if anything has changed in your mind as far as, Batman is a murderer, or you felt okay with what he did, or has anything changed in your mind as far as that goes?
Well, something that Bob said stands out to me the most. If he kills KG Beast this time, what's it mean if he goes and kills the Joker? And then he continues. What's going to stop him from killing, each and every one of his nemesis? And at that point, does he stay Batman? Because Batman is that one rule. He doesn't kill. He's not going to become like them. And if he becomes like them, he's just as much of a criminal as they are. And that's that one thing that kind of stood out to me. If he kills or he leaves them there, he's still kind of a murderer because he doesn't help him. And that's what Batman is to us all. He's that one icon that helps even when he doesn't want to help. He helps even when he shouldn't help in like something of this nature where his, you know, one of his nemesis is lying dead, about to die on the floor. That's when Batman, at least the Batman that I know, would help. And we don't see that. So I don't know if this is Batman. I don't know if I can sit back and say this is the Batman that I know and love.
Yeah, I have time to think about this. And, you know, I think this fits the story we got pretty perfectly. And I know that's not going to be a popular answer. But based on the information we got with this bedtime story, I mentioned this earlier in the episode, that this story is ingrained in his brain. Number one, why the heck is Bruce's father reading him this story? The biggest thing that I got out of this bedtime story is Left 4 Dead doesn't necessarily mean dead.
True.
If you don't know what happened. You don't know what happens to the fox. You don't know if he got out. He doesn't absolutely know that the cagey beast is going to die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, true. He's right there beside the cabin. And again, I'm making excuse for Batman and Tom King in this particular story, but I don't think it's as black and white as, yeah, he's a killer now, because I don't think he's going to start killing people. I don't. I don't think he's changed. I think he's human, and his son was almost taken away from him. He's basically been taken away from him the way that he's acting, but I don't think he would change anything if he had to do it again.
Yeah, true, true.
But it's the state of mind he's in also. It's the state of mind.
Uh-huh.
Because remember back in Nightfall, Bane broke his body? Now his mind is being broken.
Yeah.
And this is part of the story. His mind is being broken.
Yeah, he's being challenged like he's never been challenged before. It's pretty, you know, I have to say, if that were me and Mike, like I said earlier in the episode, if that were me and my son was shot and all I knew was, you know, he's in the hospital, he could be dead, he could be dying right now, I would be on the same path as Batman is now, you know, and I don't think I would change it, you know, either. I think I probably would do the same exact thing, and I would probably do it the same way each and every time. But as a fan, I don't know if I like seeing him, you know, go down this path. I don't know if I want to see him leave him in there, you know, because the Batman I know and love would go and help him out of there, even if he knew that he could be tricking him. That's the Batman that I know. I don't know. Maybe he's just so broken. He's not thinking that way anymore.
That's true. That's a good point. And, you know, we aren't at that place where Batman is there. He's going through a lot. I've said he's mentally broken. That's my point of view. So don't be writing in here and say, yeah. You know what I'm saying? We're just giving our point of view on here. Everybody has their right to their point of view, so.
I will be putting Bill's address down at the show notes at the bottom here. If you guys want to write all your negative letters to him.
So if you'd like to be on the show and contact us for this very reason, we are on Twitter at Podbat, at GothamKnight13.
And I am at JoeyGalvez84.
We do have an email. It's batpodpodcast@gmail.com. Please email us. Let us know what you think, or suggestions, or anything, opinions, whatever you'd like. We are on Facebook. It's facebook.com/thebatpod. We are on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it if we got our first iTunes review. We are also on Google Play and Stitcher. And as always, I just want to mention again, we are part of the Nerdy Legion Network, and there are a lot of great podcasts on the Nerdy Legion Podcasting Network, and you should go check them out. Some great guys over there, and we are really excited to be part of this network.
Yeah, it's been pretty fun talking with these guys, and there's pretty good stuff over there. Check it out.
So anything else you want to add for this episode?
I'm pretty excited for these books and the direction that they're taking. I really want to see what this detective is going to do in that Nightwing suit. That's the one thing that I'm intrigued about.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. Interesting, definitely. We will be back in 2 weeks. Same bat time, same bat channel. We will see you later.
We'll be right back.